This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's show, a new report warns of a potential $48 billion loss in farm income if fertilizer reductions are required of growers. We'll hear from Karen Proud, who is the president and CEO of Fertilizer Canada. Mild weather in mid-September has brought relief to hail adjusters following a challenging storm season in late August and the first few days of this month. We'll hear from the president of the Canadian Crop Hail Association, Scott McQueen, about the most recent storms. Clubroot is a serious soil-borne disease that causes swellings or galls to form on canola roots. Now is a good time to test for clubroot. Ian Epp of the Canola Council of Canada will join us on today's program. G3 has announced construction of a new multi-million dollar grain terminal at Melfort. We'll hear from their communications specialist, Peter Chura, about that. There's also going to be an elevator built at Ryecroft, Alberta. So all of that and much more on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it looks like it's going to be quite a warm day for us here.
Yeah, warm day today and could be close, if not warmer, tomorrow. Nice ridge of high pressure in control. The surface ridge is actually sitting off to the east, but the upper level ridge sitting right across the center of the continent, extending all the way northward through Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and that's got us in this warmth. Now, because the surface high is east, that's kind of showing us where things are headed, and the whole thing is progressing eastward. There's a cold front that's going to slide in on the backside of that ridge, likely coming in tomorrow night into a Wednesday, and then sort of slowly making its way through. Not out of the question that a couple of showers pass through. Slight chance Tuesday night, little chance Wednesday night too, but not much moisture with this. There's this week as a whole, as far as measurable rainfall goes, is not going to be showing too much on the tally. This afternoon, as we mentioned, though, it's warm. We've got the sunshine. No rain today. We're fine. We've got just a few scattered clouds coming in at times. Temperature climbing through the upper 20s. Should be well above normal. Let me rephrase that. We are well above normal already. Should be even farther above normal. It's not a linear scale in that regard, but pretty much double the normal, which is 14 this time of year. Tonight, partly cloudy, below 10. Tomorrow, partly mostly sunny, the high of 29. It will be breezy, a gusty southeasterly breeze ahead of this front that will turn more southerly, then sort of snap back to east-southeast, then back into southwest. The front will finally slide through Wednesday afternoon. As you mentioned, it slows a bit, and that's why, hey, we don't cool off that much on Wednesday. We do cool off a little between the morning 24th and the afternoon. The midtime low is actually the more notable one. Tonight, we have a big drop to 10 because the air is dry. As the moisture works in, tomorrow we hold at 15. The cloudiness is scattered Wednesday, and as I mentioned, that slight risk of a shower, it's about a 20% chance Tuesday night, and we're talking sprinkles. Sprinkles means light showers. Same on Wednesday. One or two brief showers firing up across the whole region. Most of us do not get them. The temperature 24 on Wednesday. As the front goes by, it's slightly cooler on Thursday. 21 is our high. It's certainly not colder. The air mass that's digging in across the west coast is not really expanding eastward. It's digging. The air mass is just expanding. That doesn't bode well for cold. The cold stays in that core. It just is a moderating cooler air mass. And in fact, we'll head right back up on Friday, probably to mostly Sunday, the high of 23.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour. The Paw is at 18 degrees, Swan River 22, Dauphin 25, Brandon 23, Show Lake Russell 21, Roblin 19. Regina is already at 27 degrees, Saskatoon 23, Hudson Bay 20, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head 24, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington 22. The Yorkton-Melville region has a partly sunny sky, a south-southwest wind at 24, gusting to 33 kilometers an hour. 34% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 23 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 21 degrees and dropped to a low of 4 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 15 degrees. The normal low is 2 degrees. The sun rose in Yorkton at 6:44 this morning, and it will set at 6:37 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Emerson at 25 degrees. The cold spot was Lynn Lake at 0. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Leader at 30 degrees. The cold spot was a tie between Stony Rapids and Uranium City. They both got down to 0. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. A new report warns of a potential $48 billion loss in farm income if fertilizer reductions are required of growers. Karen Proud is the president and CEO of Fertilizer Canada, and she says they commissioned the report by Myers Norris Penney.
Yes, Fertilizer Canada commissioned this report earlier in the year just for us to get a bit of a sense of potential impact on the farming community around possible fertilizer use reductions.
And what did this report say?
Pretty stark. So Myers Norris Penney looked at a scenario that was proposed in the European Union where in response to climate change, they were looking at imposing a 20% reduction in the use of fertilizer. And so looking at that scenario, what would happen if that was done in Canada? And the top line was that between now and 2030, if we were looking at a 20% reduction in fertilizer use, it would basically mean a $48 billion loss in farm incomes.
What do you expect to see from Ottawa now that we have a Liberal minority government again?
Well, our hope is that by undertaking this study, and I should say the $48 billion loss in farm income is only related to three crops that that we looked at, canola, corn, and spring wheat. My hope is that by our doing this study, the federal government will have a look at its own targets of a 30% reduction in emissions from fertilizer use and take a different approach than what they did in the EU. The federal government has not suggested at this stage that they are following the EU approach, but we know, of course, any reduction in emissions to that level would necessitate a reduction in fertilizer use. So we're just hoping that this study starts us on a path of being able to really sit down with the federal government, with the provinces, with the farmers and farming community, and really talk about what is practical, pragmatic for this sector that doesn't result in these sorts of devastating numbers.
So would you like to have a meeting with the federal government to discuss this issue?
Oh, very much so. So, you know, I don't want to give any indication that we are not 100% supportive about actions to address climate change. I think you only have to live through this summer to realize that we really do have to make some efforts, and we're absolutely committed. What we really need to do is sit down and talk about the best way to do this, and that's our call on the the federal government is really to sit with the stakeholders, including the provincial governments, the other farm groups, ourselves, the experts, the scientists, and really work out an approach that, that makes sense, that allows our agricultural sector to grow, which we know is a goal of the federal government. So we want a way to continue to grow our agricultural sector, but look at what needs to be done at the same time around reducing emissions.
And it looks like a good place to start would be the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program.
Oh, absolutely. And we've been promoting the 4R Nutrient Stewardship for over a decade. We've been working with farm groups and farmers. It's a scientifically proven approach to help reduce emissions. It's not the only way. And you know, we certainly need to sit down with other groups to see if there are other practices that help. But 4R Nutrient Stewardship does help to reduce emissions, and I think it's a great place to start and to have the conversations with the government on how we can really roll that out across Canada to start to address this issue. It's a proven method, and we want to work very closely with the federal government, as we have already been doing with a number of provinces, including Saskatchewan.
And Ottawa's plan to increase agricultural exports to other countries seems to contradict their desire to reduce agricultural fertilizer use.
Well, it's at this stage, I think it's an impossibility. So we're not going to be able to meet our export targets if we're targeting fertilizer reductions. We know you need fertilizer in order to grow crops. We know you need fertilizer to enhance the yield. So we believe there are ways of meeting both our climate targets as well as our export targets, and that's the balance we want to strike. And you know, I have heard, and I'm encouraged to hear from the federal government contacts that we have, that they want to sit down and have these conversations. We're expecting the government to come out with a bit of a white paper in the next little while on this emissions target, and we're hoping we see some maybe more pragmatic or an articulation of a pragmatic approach to all of this.
And is there anything you would like to add?
One of the main goals is we do know that following the election, there is going to be a federal, provincial, territorial meeting of the ministers of agriculture. And we feel this is a really great place to start by having those sit down and engaging with the provinces about the best approach for emissions reduction. So we are asking all of the provinces and the agriculture ministers who are part of that table to put this on the agenda for the next meeting, and let's really start the conversations.
Karen Proud is the president and CEO of Fertilizer Canada. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
There are no indications China will be lifting restrictions on Canadian canola imports as a direct response to the exchange of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou for Canadians Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, according to the Canola Council of Canada. The two Michaels returned to Canada on Friday following a deal negotiated by the United States Department of Justice that allowed the Chinese telecom executive to return to China after nearly 3 years under house arrest in Vancouver on a U.S. extradition request. Following Meng's arrest in December of 2018, Canadian farmers and exporters found themselves caught in the geopolitical back and forth when China declared that canola shipments from Canada contained certain weed seeds, leading to the export permits for Canada's two largest canola exporters, Richardson and Viterra, being terminated. Since then, the Canola Council of Canada and the federal government have worked through diplomatic channels and brought the matter to the World Trade Organization, but there has been no resolution. And it appears there will not be any immediate changes as a result of Meng Wanzhou's release. Canada has been seeking resolution to the canola issue through the WTO going back to September of 2019. Soy meal prices in China, the world's top consumer of the animal feed ingredient, are rising after at least 20 soybean crushing plants shuttered to comply with curbs on industrial power consumption. Five crushing plants in the northern city of Tianjin closed last week, including a facility owned by top trading house Louis Dreyfus Company, or LDC. The LDC facility in Tianjin has a daily crushing capacity of 4,000 metric tons. It's been closed since September 22nd. Global crops trader and processor Bunge, which has a crushing facility in Tianjin too, responded to the government mandate but told the production is not materially different from what they expected. CN and CP Rail supplied a combined 92% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 7, a decline from last week's 96%, reflecting a decline in performance on CN, offset by an increase in performance on CP. CN's performance fell below the 90% threshold, supplying 85% of cars ordered. CP's performance improved slightly, supplying 100% of cars ordered, as compared to 99% in the prior week. CN and CP combined will enter week 8 with 594 outstanding cars, all to the account of CN, a net significant increase of 426 from the 168 cars outstanding at the end of last week. The change in the outstanding car count represents an increase in the number of outstanding hopper cars on CN by 426, and no change for CP, which has no outstanding orders once again this week, as has been the case in 6 of the first 7 weeks of the new crop year. 19 cattle were seized at 3 locations in 2 provinces as part of a fraud investigation conducted by the Alberta RCMP Livestock Investigation Unit and Livestock Services of Saskatchewan. 2 purebred Black Angus bulls were located following a September 2nd search warrant in the Spiritwood area. Additional search warrants in the Lloydminster, Saskatchewan, and Thorsby, Alberta areas on September 16th located more animals, which were identified through registered brands and/or registered purebred tattoos. RCMP say 2 Alberta men allegedly purchased cattle with a fraudulent check and moved them out of province without brand inspection. Shane and Shannon Hoff from Two Hills, Alberta, have been charged with fraud over $5,000. They're scheduled to appear in Vegreville Provincial Court on October 18th. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 60 seconds time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's partly sunny and 23 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Mild weather in mid-September has brought relief to hail adjusters following a challenging storm season in late August and the first couple of days of this month. The president of the Canadian Crop Hail Association, Scott McQueen, says there were about 4 dozen hail damage claims from storms between September 5th and the 15th.
We've had a light bit of hail activity in the western provinces here since about September 5th, so it's been a nice break for all the companies. We did have some sprinkles of hail here and there, but all reporting light damage.
I understand there were 47 recent claims. Where did they come from, and what was the extent of the loss?
Well, they were kind of scattered around here. So we had a few close to Saskatoon here around the Keniston Hay Warden area. We had a few up around the Yorkton area. We had a sprinkle down in the Swift Current area, all kind of scattered days. And then we had a little bit in the north as well, up north of PA. So very light damage on all the reported storms, and so that's nice. And you know, a lot of the crop is harvested, so you know, these late storms don't hit a lot of fields.
What was the size of the hailstones?
Yeah, you know what? What I've heard is just small, like pea-sized hail. We haven't heard anything bigger than that. Basically, pea or smaller. So a lot of it, sometimes a little bit of sleet almost.
How are claim numbers and payouts for the season?
Well, so payouts, you know what, in about a week or two, we should have all the numbers in from everybody to give you a better idea. But below average on number of claims, but definitely well above average on claim payouts. Likely we're, you know, approaching a 10-year high on average claim payout in Saskatchewan, Alberta. Manitoba's probably a little bit okay.
I heard that earlier this summer it was almost double the average payout this year.
Definitely. We're looking, you know, when the final numbers come in, but I think we'll be right around double of last year's average claim, yeah. So, I mean, it's been a challenging year, obviously, in the agriculture industry, and we fall in that as well. And, you know, it's a great industry to be in. It goes in waves, and this year was a challenging year for everybody, farmers and insurance companies. And, you know, we look forward to another year next year and a fresh start.
Scott McQueen is the president of the Canadian Crop Hail Association.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for October closed at 122.40 today. That's down 52. December live cattle closed at 127.80, down 35. October feeder cattle closed at 154.77, down 2.57. November feeder cattle closed at 155.57, down 3 full cents. October lean hogs closed at 90.25, that's up 2.97. December lean hogs closed at 81.55, up 4.75. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, clubroot is a serious soil-borne disease that causes swellings or galls to form on canola roots. Now is a good time to test for clubroot, which has been confirmed on 75 commercial canola fields in Saskatchewan since 2017. As has been the case for the past number of years, SAS Canola will cover the $100 cost of each clubroot soil test kit. Ian Epp is an agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada.
Fall's a good time to do clubroot testing, a couple weeks after harvest. Usually we want to wait at least 3 weeks after the field's been combined. If there are any clubroot galls that have formed this year, it gives them time to break down and those spores to actually be in the soil a little bit.
How do you get a sample and where should you get it from?
So the best place to sample is any high-risk area. So if throughout the growing season you identified an area that wasn't growing properly, that you didn't understand why, some sort of patch that was different, that might be a good test to sample. If you don't have any recollection of a weird spot in the field or with the drought, it was hard to tell if it was clubroot or just the field was very uneven, I would go somewhere close to the approach. The approach is generally where we drop soil off from previous fields, so that would be a good spot to check. The proper sampling pattern for that would be, you know, maybe in a W pattern or something around the approach, and then take a few different samples from there. And, you know, unlike a soil sample, we're looking in the top 5 to 10 centimeters. So kind of scrape off that surface material, the straw, and then scoop some soils in that top 5 to 10 centimeters.
Do dry conditions have an impact on clubroot development?
In dry years, generally, clubroot doesn't spread or doesn't colonize the canola plants quite as well. So dry soils aren't necessarily a friend of clubroot. That being said, if there are resting spores in your soil, if you do have clubroot in your soil, it won't have disappeared this year. We might have, you know, if we grew a susceptible variety, we might have maybe spread it a little less or created less new spores, but it's definitely still going to be there. So definitely something to be checking. And just thinking about this year, if you have a problem canola field, definitely a good time to check for clubroot. But thinking more about next year, your cereal fields might actually be the right fields to be testing this fall if they're going into canola next year.
Are testing kits readily available?
In Saskatchewan here, SAS Canola is again covering the cost of a clubroot sample, so we can drop your sample off with Discovery Seed Lab, so they'll cover, I think, one test per farm. You can get your kit, just take a little shovel and scoop some dirt in that top 5 to 10 centimeters.
Have you seen any signs of clubroot this year?
There has definitely been some clubroot. most of it occurring in areas that already have club roots. So, you know, just that kind of continuation of more fields on the same, in the same area, or adjacent fields, or, you know, finding it in canola, in fields that haven't been canola for a couple of years or something like that. So it is in the province. It is here to stay, unfortunately. Once we have club root, we see those patches or those fields spreading a little bit. The good news is that club root resistant varieties are still working really, really well. So if you do have club root, or you're concerned about club root, one of the easiest decisions you can make this time of year is when you're booking your canola seed for next year, is to make sure you have a club root resistant variety.
Another canola disease to monitor is blackleg.
We can still be looking for blackleg a little bit. It's so I guess it's a little tougher to do. Like, quite often we do stem sampling to look at how bad the blackleg is in the field. So you cut that stem right around that soil surface there. That's great at swathing timing, or close to, you know, or straight cutting, if you're straight cutting your canola right around harvest time. Given that we've had some rain this fall, and canola fields that were harvested a couple weeks ago, quite often you can't do that. It's harder to get an accurate read on that anymore. Blackleg will continue to grow and colonize after the plant's dead. So not a yield impact, not really a problem, but kind of skews when we are doing some sampling. That being said, it is still a good idea to see if, you know, if you have tons of blackleg, that is maybe something to consider. And definitely we can do some race testing. So if you'd like to send away samples, we can give you some more insights on what type of blackleg you have. And that might be give you some future information, again, for your next canola variety. If you'd like to maybe switch blackleg genetics, that might be a really helpful way to stop blackleg next time you grow canola on that field. So something to kind of tuck away for future knowledge, but great to have the information now.
Ian Epp is an agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada. If you want a free club root soil test kit, contact the SAS Canola office in Saskatoon, your local SARM plant health officer, or your regional Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture office. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. G3 has announced construction of a new multi-million-dollar grain terminal at Melfort. G3 corporate communications specialist Peter Chura says the company will build new grain elevators in Melfort, Saskatchewan, and Ryecroft, Alberta.
We've been steadily increasing our network of high-efficiency grain facilities across Western Canada and all the important grain-growing regions where we can both draw the appropriate amount of grain and earn the business of farm customers with this value proposition that farmers can save time and money with the convenient delivery opportunities at our facilities, and also with the speed with which they can deliver their grain. So these two new areas are sort of a logical extension of what we've been doing across Western Canada for the last 5 years.
How many locations do you already have across the prairies?
Well, across the prairies right now we have 17 grain elevators. So with the addition of these two, once the regulatory approvals are achieved and the construction is completed in early 2023, that would make 19 grain handling facilities we have across Western Canada. So that's the grain elevators. We also have in Eastern Canada some port terminals, a couple in Ontario and a couple in Quebec. And of course, on the West Coast, just opened last year, G3 Terminal Vancouver, this state-of-the-art grain handling, grain exporting facility that's already breaking records in terms of its ability to unload trains quickly, to load ships quickly, to keep the grain moving to market.
Now, what will this terminal at Melfort cost?
Well, it's a significant investment. Of course, we don't disclose the exact figure, but it's a significant investment in not only for our network, but also in the communities involved. We're giving farmers in the area more opportunities to deliver their grain, to market their grain. And of course, we like being involved in the communities we serve, with the employees that and the staff that we have there, getting involved in their communities.
How are sales looking right now?
Well, that's not really my area of expertise. It's definitely something that we keep our eye on. It's our bread and butter, if you will, but we're certainly drawing a lot of grain from a lot of parts of Western Canada, and we're having a lot of success marketing it overseas and moving it very quickly through G3 Terminal Vancouver and our other port terminals in Eastern Canada.
How has grain movement been going since the new crop year began on August 1st?
Very well. We're moving a lot of grain through all of our facilities in Western Canada. We're moving it very quickly to G3 Terminal Vancouver on the West Coast, getting it quickly unloaded from the trains, quickly loaded onto the ships and onto overseas markets. And the more quickly we can move the grain like that, the more delivery opportunities that we make for farmers and all their communities to bring their grain to us.
Has this year's drought had much of an impact on G3?
that area of the market isn't my specialty. Of course, we understand that it's been a very challenging year for producers, so we're doing our best to work with them to give them the delivery opportunities that they need and to make sure that we keep their grain moving to market.
Peter Chura is the Corporate Communications Specialist with G3 in Winnipeg. He hopes the new elevators will be open by 2023. They're located in Melfort, Saskatchewan, and Ryecroft, Alberta.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed down across the board today. November canola closed at $883.60, down $4.30. January canola closed at $875.70, down $2.80. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $921.50, up 5.5 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $720.75, up 1 cent. December Chicago wheat closed at $722.25, down 1.5 cents. December corn closed at $539.50, up 12.75 cents. November soybeans closed at $1,287.50, up 2.5 cents. December oats closed at $5.87 per bushel, up 11.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. A research project is aiming to develop a more accurate estimate of a crop's use of soil nutrients. University of Saskatchewan soil science professor Fran Wally and John Hurd, a soil fertility specialist with Manitoba Agriculture, are working with Lyle Cowell, the manager of agronomy services with Nutrien Ag Solutions in northeastern Saskatchewan. Cowell says it's time for some new data.
And we've relied on some pretty old, possibly inaccurate numbers over the years, and there's really never been a good effort to really verify the accuracy of our removal of nutrients from the soil when we harvest a crop. We're into our second year now of collecting grain samples from across Western Canada. Last year, we collected about 1,200 samples, and we'll continue to do this for the next couple of years so that we can get a better handle on what rate of nutrients are we actually removing when we harvest a bushel of canola? How much nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium are we actually removing? Because that's important to know, to combine with the soil test, to know what's in the soil and how much we're going to remove.
And there could be some positive news for growers.
There's some early data that suggests that we really aren't removing nutrients at quite the rate we thought we were, which is good news, really. It means that we have better efficiency of fertilizers than we might expect. We need to have those numbers, and good news is that they will be available soon.
That's Lyle Cowell with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back in a moment. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. A new swine diagnostic extension service offered by Prairie Diagnostic Services, or PDS, is providing extra assistance to veterinarians in translating diagnostic results into clinical actions. In May, in partnership with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine, PDS launched a new swine diagnostic extension service to help veterinarians and farmers translate diagnostic results into treatment. Dr. Yanyan Wong, an anatomic pathologist and CEO of PDS, tells us what the role of Prairie Diagnostic Services is.
Prairie Diagnostic Services, PDS, is a full-service animal health diagnostic laboratory. It is set up as a not-for-profit organization funded by the Ministry of Agriculture of Saskatchewan and the University of Saskatchewan. We provide laboratory diagnostic services for all animal species, and our clients are mostly clinical veterinarians, but we also serve some animal owners and researchers.
What services does your organization provide?
As I said, we are a full-service animal health diagnostic laboratory, so we offer all the disciplines within our sector, for example, bacteriology, virology, molecular biology, toxicology, parasitology, anatomic pathology, and clinical pathology. We with this wide range of services, it's really quite difficult to list all the equipment we use, but what I can tell you is that we continue to keep up with the newest and best type of equipment to do our job. And within our team, we have around 70 employees, including over 10 diagnostic veterinary professionals.
What prompted the creation of this new swine diagnostic extension service?
Yes, that's a good question. I am very proud of people working in PDS. We are very good at doing what we are doing, which is to provide diagnostic results to veterinarians and animal owners. We have been doing a very good job in this, but what we could see is that we have room to even improve in the area of to helping the veterinarians to interpret the diagnostic data. And that's why we created this swine diagnostic extension service. Within this service, we partner with Drs. John Harding and Matthias Koester. Both are professors in WCVM, so they are going to take and answer client phone calls and emails regarding when you have consultation need on a diagnostic plan. So if veterinarians are facing a case that they're not quite sure what to submit as diagnostic samples and what tests to request, Dr. Harding and Koester can help them with that. And when there's a complex clinical cases, for example, if a veterinarian submitted several cases to PDS in different times, and then the reports were generated by different diagnostic professionals, and the veterinarian needs some help to put all the reports and data and results together and needs some expert second opinions regarding the clinical actions, they can also contact our services. And then finally, if there are some cases that veterinarians have the diagnostic results and they just need a second pair of eyes or a second opinion on how that can translate into their clinical actions, they can also contact Dr. John Harding and Matthias Koester.
Now, how do users or clients access this service?
We see this service mostly will benefit swine veterinarians and mixed animal veterinarians who deal with some swine cases. They can email or call Dr. John Harding and Koester, and I hope when this go online, we will have a link to their emails and phone number so that your listeners will get those information on the website or in this podcast. What they need to provide, basically just the clinical histories, what kind of problems they are dealing with, and if there are some diagnostic reports from PDS, they can also bring that to our attention, and then I believe they can then work with Dr. Harding and Koester.
How is this new service expected to benefit the pork sector overall?
I think one of the benefits is that veterinarians can get clinically relevant expert opinions, and which will be a value-added service on top of our diagnostic results. And this service will be free of charge to our clients or potential clients. And by this service, I can see it will further link animal health to the diagnostic laboratory. It will more fully translate the diagnostic information into actions for veterinarians and farmers. I think we have done a good job in translating the diagnostic information to clinically relevant interpretation, but we are seeing that we can do an even better job by this service.
And what has been the response to the service so far?
Yeah, we just started not far not far ago, so it has yet to be seen. I know that we have several inquiries and several instances that the veterinarians took on this service. I have not heard anything but good, but I'm also confident that this will grow into even a better taken service by the veterinarians.
How can anyone interested get more information?
Yep, as I said before, email Dr. John Harding and Matthias Costa and or phone them.
Dr. Yanyan Wong is an anatomic pathologist and CEO of PDS. It's time now for your agriculture weather, and that's a presentation of Ducks Unlimited. The new SCIC seeding deadline for fall seeded crops is September 30th. There's still time to sign up for DUC's winter wheat program. The GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Partly to mainly sunny, winds west-southwest at 15 to 25 and a high of 28. For tonight, partly cloudy, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20 and a low of 10. Tomorrow, partly to mainly sunny, winds southeast at 25 to 40, a high of 29. Wednesday, a mix of sun and cloud, winds west-southwest at 20 to 35, a high of 24. Thursday, mainly sunny, a high of 21. Friday, partly to mainly sunny, a high of 23. In the Paw, it's 18 degrees, Swan River 22, Dauphin 25, Brandon 23, Show Lake Russell 21, Roblin 19. Regina is at 27, Saskatoon 23, Hudson Bay 20, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head 24, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 22. The Yorkton-Melville region has a partly sunny sky, a south-southwest wind at 24, gusting to 33 kilometers an hour. 34% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 23 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.